Alafia.
Alafia, Shay Alafia Nee. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. All right. I'm sending an email. I'll be right there.
Okay, sure.
Thank you. Okay. Alafia, greetings, greetings, Jambalaya women. Glad to have you all here today. Can you all hear me? Yeah? Okay, fantastic. Very good. All right. So yeah, we have a special treat today. We have a guest speaker. A dynamic woman. I'm just as excited as you all are to meet her, to connect with her, and to learn everything that she will be teaching and sharing. So this is going to be extra special. Lots of great things happening. Alafia Ia, welcome.
Welcome. So you can see me now?
I can see you just perfectly. Glad to have you here.
Thank you. So just so you understand, if it plugs in or has a battery, I usually have a problem with it. So technology is really not my forte. So okay. I'm a little nervous about how this is all going to go.
Well, you know, that nervousness is perhaps to be expected, but it's rather painless. At least.
So I see you assure me of that. Okay.
Yeah. So we're navigating this together. So I'm here to have your back. Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So Ia, at this time, it is right about at the hour, but typically we allow, you know, about 5 to 7 minutes for everyone to join us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a nicely sized class of 29 women. And so, yeah, usually by about 5 minutes to 7 minutes after, the vast majority are here, those who can participate today.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So did you get the email that I sent you?
Yes, I did receive the email.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There is a video that I want to show.
Okay.
If the file was too big to send, but I was just about when I realized I needed to get on the air right quick, I was just about to try to figure out how to send you the link.
Okay.
To where it is online. So do I have a minute to see if I can still get that together?
Absolutely, okay. Yes.
All right. I want to try this and hope to heck that my computer doesn't crash. Okay. Let's see. Can try this. Okay. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that the computer didn't go left.
So what I will do is I'll open my email so I can check for your message.
Okay, I'm still getting to Facebook in order to get you the link. Okay, so I sent you a link to our Facebook page.
Okay.
And I got you as far as where the videos are.
Mm-hmm.
But my computer is really slow.
Okay.
And I really did if I actually tried to get exactly to the correct video, that everything would crash. So I figure okay. I can get you that far, and then I can direct you from there if mine doesn't work from this end.
Okay, fantastic.
All right.
Okay, and okay, I see it. I see it perfectly. Okay, thank you, Ia.
You're welcome. I have to go. I'll be right back.
Okay, yes.
Alafia.
Shay Alafia. Thank you, Jambalaya women, once again. We're gathering. It's always good to see your lovely, beautiful, smiling, joyful faces. We are so pleased to have a wonderful treat today with our guest lecturer, our guest teacher, who I will soon be introducing. And so I'm looking at the time. We're going to give ourselves exactly 2 more minutes. And at 2:10, my time, I'm Central Standard Time, 3:10 Eastern, we will be beginning. So very shortly, we'll be getting this party started, and it's going to be awesome. So thank you again for being here. Let me begin by officially and once again saying Alafia.
Alafia Nishe.
Ashe, Ashe. Welcome, 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 all Jambalaya women. We are gathered today for the continuation of this exciting course, which is Jambalaya Spirit Works Part 1 with our beloved Yeye Louise Atish. As we know, Yeye is in much demand, fulfilling her purpose, her destiny, her ministry, which takes her to the far corners of the earth. So at this moment, she is in Costa Rica as part of a wonderful healing and herbal retreat happening there. But one of the benefits of our experience here is that in our relationship as students of Yeye Tish, we have the opportunity to sit at the feet of other elegant elders. And today, our guest lecturer is Iya Oya Dei. She is speaking to us today about African American ancestor reverence. And so part of this series, when we have the guest lecturers, just for everyone's understanding, this is expanding the territory, as I like to say, of our spiritual consciousness, as well as our spiritual community, our connection with other good people who are doing great things in the world. And that's such a benefit for us. We all have unique paths. We all have a unique destiny. And so to be imparted wisdom by these teachers, including our teacher today, is super beneficial for things present in our lives and surely things to come. As we move forward with the lectures, there also will be some other outreach members or outreach participants who will have the opportunity specifically to join only the guest lectures. So today it is the intimate circle of us Jambalaya women, but we might look forward to some other people who are joining us for these guest lectures. So I'm going to pause for a moment and make sure that everything is good with our technology. I'm going to ask you all to, for the moment, just go ahead and mute yourselves. Everything is looking good there. And before I begin the official and formal introduction of Iya, I just want to explain our format for today. Today, after my introduction, Iya will have the floor and she will come in her own way to introduce herself and to present on her topic. There will be time for a dedicated time for Q&A. So if you do have any questions that may arise during her speaking, just take note of them, or if you want to record them in the chat, that would be fine as well. But we're going to have a block of time for Q&A, okay? All right, very good. So, Iya Oye Oya Dei wears many hats in life that weave the secular and sacred, and where one set of skills or knowledge informs the other. She is executive director and visionary of Omnira. Am I saying that correctly, Iya?
Omnira.
Omnira Institute, a nonprofit formed in 2011 whose mission is to recover and preserve the roots of African American culture by reintroducing and reaffirming the historic and psychic links to West African cultural and spiritual tradition. The Institute does this through its performing arm. Please say the name for us.
Awon Ahun Omnira.
Which means voices of freedom, and serves as the narrator for its performances. She has been the administrator and booking agent, as well as the publicist for all of its activities since its start in 2009. A former journalist who worked for 20 years in the newspaper business at the Alameda Newspaper Group, the Sacramento Bee, and the San Francisco Chronicle, she also was an activist for minority journalists, including developing and implementing a workshop for minority high school journalists. She says, "It was the spirit of one of my friends who said that I obey the wind." Iya Oya Dei said, "I had never thought of it that way, but there were ideas that came to me and I was compelled to follow through. With all of those ideas, I thought someone else could do it better than me, had more of a stake in the outcome than me, but spirit and Oya had other ideas." Beginning in 2003, Iya Oya Dei developed and implemented a Juneteenth ritual commemorating the Emancipation Proclamation, including many of the faiths of the captives who would become slaves during the slave trade era, including the First Nation. The same year, she organized a Sunday school for practitioners of Lukumi, the West African faith tradition she follows, as it is found expression in Cuba. It ended in 2006. And I'll read one more paragraph. She has an extensive bio, which I will post in the group. Beginning in 2009 to the present, Iya Oya De I developed and implemented several lecture demonstrations drawing on African traditional knowledge and applied it to African American history using a choir comprised of members of an African American church and the Lukumi community, who also provided the musical framework and expertise of the sacred drum tradition known as Bata. And there is much, much more that we can share about her. Again, her bio will be available for you. And so without further ado, welcome, Iya Oya De I.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, ladies. Thank you for taking time out of your Sunday to invite me into your life for these next few minutes. I'm a little nervous, bear with me. And so my format is that I couldn't see how I could separate what my personal journey was from the work that we do. So I'm just going to, everything is like a holistic kind of way. So I'm going to start with how I grew up. I grew up as an Episcopalian, not African Methodist Episcopalian, regular, ordinary Episcopalian church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It was a very dry kind of experience spiritually. But one of the things that went on, my mother's family was very oriented toward their elders and their ancestors. So there was a Bible that I saw when I was 18 or 19 years old that had names and dates going back to 1791. My family gathered every year for a family picnic or family reunion. So this sense of history, of personal history, parallel to, you know, the history I might learn in school, was something that was a foundation for me. And I didn't have to think about it. It was just there. So that was the start. I think like most African Americans in my house, there was a picture of Jesus added to that. In 1963 was a picture of John F. Kennedy, then followed one of Martin Luther King and one of Robert Kennedy Jr. And so this was kind of like, you know, what you might call the spiritual area in the house. I think most families, there was a coffee table where the Bible was. This was as much as a spiritual experience as I had. So I was always looking for something. And one of the things that I was looking for was, once I decided I would be a writer when I was 12 years old, then I was reading books, and I was finding books by African-American writers. I was particularly interested in expression of African-American women. So I discovered Alice Walker, Nikki Giovanni, Toni K. Bambara, Zora Neale Hurston, Gloria Naylor, Endazaki Shangi, and of course, Toni Morrison, may she rest in peace. Endazaki Shangi was particular for me because on the journey, I was becoming a young woman, and I was interested in spirituality. And so I was going to this church that, not my church that I grew up in, but I was going to this church that emphasized that God should look like you, you know, or you should look, if God was created in man's image, then that image should be you. And in your case, you know, in my case, as an African-American, as a person of color, which is 1978, then I decided that it was important for me, given the racism that I had really woken up to in high school and college, is that, you know, this idea of a white guy, of a white man sitting on a cloud directing life was a problem for me. You know, it was a psychological problem for me. So since I could not escape the idea in my own mind, I could not escape the idea that God was a white man on his cloud, then I had to do something about that. In this church, then God should be black. If you're black, God should be black. If you're East Indian, God should be East Indian, et cetera, et cetera. And Azaki Shange, at the end of her play for Color Girls, says, "I found God in myself." And I loved her. That was the other thing that cemented it, was that this was a problem also to be worshiping a male that was God. So a year later, I find myself in California. I have finished a graduate program at Stanford University, and it was right after the Bakke decision, which meant that, you know, white people then started looking at me and directly saying that the only reason you're here is because of affirmative action. I wanted to get away from that. And it also just confirmed further the need to have a consciousness about a higher being that was black and was, you know, what comprised a black consciousness, what comprised a spirituality that was African in form. I had not seen this. So, and also that year, I read a book called 2000 Seasons, which really was the first time that I had read a book that addressed the spiritual issues that led to the enslavement of African people. The way this book was presented was not the facts as if not the facts or even any of the ways that a lot of books in English presented the African slave trade as if it made sense and not as the evil that it is and was. So, so I was in Oakland. I moved to Oakland 3 or 4 weeks after I got out of Stanford. I was walking down the street, Telegraph Avenue, and I see a sign. I can still vividly see it in my mind. It was on blue paper, and this is how communications were done back then. You know, nothing was electronic. If you wanted to know what was going on, you had to look at bulletin boards, you had to read newspapers, etc. And so posted on Telegraph Avenue in Oakland, near where I lived, was a sign that said, "Black Women in Spirituality." And the subtitle was "Yoruba Goddesses." And all I saw was "Black Women in Spirituality," and I knew I was going. And guess who the teacher was? Louisa Teach. So my journey, I owe to my ancestors, but also I owe everything that happened after that initial seeing that sign and going to her lectures, everything that I owe after that is to Oshun. Teach. I became part of a group she called the Daughters of the Gelet Fun. Teach referred me to my first godmother, Bobby Cespedes. I was read as a child of Oya. I moved on, had my Ayubono was the one who actually was the one who initiated me to Oya, and it was the same person through whom Louisa got her first initiation, Anya Biosun. And so, and he also, a child of Oshun. And in 1996, I initiated, the only time that I did an initiation myself was to my goddaughter, Marguerite George Oshun Ishegun, who is now deceased. But anyway, everything that happened, as far as I'm concerned, after seeing that sign on the Telegraph, on Telegraph Avenue, is I attribute to the grace of Oshun. And so it's by the grace of Oshun, Olodumare, and the holy ancestors that I can speak to you today of this journey. And of course, from looking back, I can see how I can see the connection, but as it was, each unfoldment was a mystery to me. It was like, well, how did I get here? How did this happen? Now I see that I was guided all along by some force or another. And I was never a good seer. You know, there are some people who can sit next to you and read you, or they can look at something and see, you know, being a seer. I was never like that. All I did was listen. You know, I got an idea and it wouldn't let go of me. So let's see, the first one was I wanted to, there were some of my god sisters were a little short on cash. They had children. And, you know, there were these hats that we always had to wear in ceremony. And so I just thought, why don't you guys, you know, you guys can sew. Why don't you take the scraps left over from some of the things that we do and make the little hats? I kept bringing it up. They didn't want to do it. In my mind's eye, I kept seeing the little hats. I started making the hats. I started selling the hats at festivals. How this all happened, but I just remember vividly, like I saw the idea and it was like, well, they won't do it. I guess I'll try it. And one of my friends was laughing. She said, Wanda can't sew. And I hadn't sewn since eighth grade, but I was able to get showings and be in festivals. So I just followed. That was the first one. The second one was the candles that we had in Lukumi, you know, they had images, if anything, of the saints. So, and that was from Santeria. Our godfather made, he was one of the first people to do an initiation or to refer to the Orisha without any reference to the Catholic Church. And yet the images that we had of the Orisha at that time, this was in the 1990s, any candle that you bought in a shop, and there were no cards, but all the images were of Catholic Catholic saints. So I found a photographer. I got some of my friends who were initiated to various Orisha, and had them pose in the genre. My best seller, so to speak, was of my friend, I can't remember her name right now, Tina Smith. She lives in Las Vegas. She's crowned a Yemaya. Was at Alameda Beach here, you know, near my house, near where I live in Oakland. And so I did this series of cards, you know, starting with the Legba, Ogun, Ochosi, et cetera, and sold these cards. And that was called Nouveau Risha. In 2003, I was at the election ceremony for, again, one of my godbrothers, for his stepson was getting elected. He was like 9 years old. So that day there were they wanted him to feel comfortable. So at his election ceremony, people brought their children. So there are all these people with children, you know, between the ages of like 5 and 14. And I said, you know, they need a Sunday school. If I start a Sunday school, would you bring your child? And they said yes. So I decided, okay, I'll have a Sunday school in my basement. So I set up chairs, tables, so forth. I had let everybody know the time and place, and it was on a Sunday morning at the time when most people were going to church. 15 people brought their children to the Sunday school. The Sunday school lasted for 3 years. That same year, I had been somewhere at some Misa, some people call it Ikuyoko. And what I did see was, or understand, was that so many of our ancestors here in the United States had died before freedom came, and that they had been lingering, waiting for freedom to come. And not necessarily waiting, but they didn't, how can I put this? They were still trapped in a way because they had had every intent of becoming free before their life ended. And that didn't happen. So there was a trap, a spiritual trap that they were existing in. And I was thinking something needed to be done for them. And I thought somebody else should do it. But what I was told was, no, you do it. And these are the items that you need in order to help free these trapped spirits. So that was the first Juneteenth that I did in June of 2003. And then each year subsequent to that, we have done that ceremony. And the other thing that I was told was that our ancestors here in the United States, you know, the Negro spirituals, so to speak, as we called them, those freedom songs, we sang those freedom songs we sang to be free, and that we needed to continue to sing those songs to maintain the freedom. That, you know, you just don't arrive at freedom's door and it's like, okay, all that's over. We don't have to do those things anymore. No. And as we're learning now in the context that we're living in, for, you know, just general society. I was just watching the news today where they're saying that, you know, the freedoms that we were accustomed to, we have to continue to fight for them. They aren't just something that you can rely on. And for so many years, you could, now you can't. So in the same way, what we have to do for ourselves in terms of maintaining our spiritual freedom, maintaining our integrity as a people, is that things that we used to do, we have to continue to do. And even though, you know, let's see, how can I put this? The African way is that you always use what you had, build on it, and you keep moving into the future. So then, you know, these things that are not stagnant, but you don't throw away your past. And in this country, just the milieu that we live in, is like you're always, it's expected to throw away your past. We should not. What we have gained, what those songs mean, all of what we did is the medicine that we need to take us into the future. So 2003 was the first Juneteenth ritual that we did. And I have I'm going to show you a video that kind of gives even better illustration of what that ceremony looked like. But also in 2003 was when I met my husband. And my husband is, his name is Tobaji Stewart. His Ocha name is Obatero. He is crowned to Shango. And he is Olubata. And what that means is that he is the owner of the drums. He has been playing Bata drums since 1972. And for a long time, he was the most renowned Bata drummer in the Bay Area. And I'll just cut you the chase as to why I'm talking about him. Of all the things that we now do, he is the knowledge bearer who learned those things and taught them to us, so that everything that you see us do in public, I lay at his feet. He taught us these things. And, but he told me, and I listened. He said that, you know, when we try to introduce the elements or the idea of African spirituality to many of our African-American friends, relatives, and so forth, they will be clutching Jesus like this. It's like, you're not going, no, this is what I believe in. Leave that alone. But as I mentioned earlier, what you could find in every African-American household was that picture of Jesus, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, meaning that there was a way that we hung on to history. There was a way that we had a reverence for our own past, right? So what I thought and what he thought was that the real medicine that African Americans need are the songs of the ancestors. So Oro Egun, which is what it's called, sound for Oro Egun, referring to the ancestors, literally meaning bone. Oro Egun is a ceremony that's generally done specifically when someone is about to make Ocha or to be fully initiated. And this is in the Lukumi ritual. And so, you know, everywhere I went, when someone was about to be initiated, they would, certain part of the first part of the ritual for that day was Oro Egun. And there would be a couple songs that everybody knew, and then the rest of them we would kind of muddle through. I had no idea that there was a whole litany, a liturgy for Otto Eglin until my godfather died. Then we had to do a ceremony called honras. That's the Spanish word for it. I don't know the Yoruba word for it, but it was an elevation for him. And so there was, we had to spend a day where we played for the ancestors. And so many of you are familiar with going to a Bembe, and you know the movements for, you know, this is the movement for Legba, this is the movement for Ochosi, this is the movement for Oya, et cetera. I had no idea what the movement was for the ancestors. So there are a couple of times in a regular Bembe where we are move in a counterclockwise circle and we do a specific movement. I didn't know why counterclockwise, but anyway. So this ceremony for the ancestors for my godfather, Anya Biosun, he died in 1993. This ceremony was in 1996. We were moving in a counterclockwise circle for hours. They were singing songs. We were bored to death. We didn't know any of these songs. But hold the thought about the counterclockwise circle and singing for the ancestors. So fast forward, 2009, I go to a class held by Linda Tillery. Linda Tillery is leader of the Cultural Heritage Choir. And so the class that she sponsored, she's talking about, you know, the history of African-American music. And specifically, I had gone there because I wanted to learn more about the spirituals, because I had begun the idea of doing presentations for African-American people specifically, that one way, that people don't read, but one way that we can have an understanding and appreciation of our history is through the Negro spirituals, because those songs tell the story of our enslavement and our journey to freedom in our own words. That is our music. Those are our words. It's our expression. This is not an academic rendition of what happened to us. This is a first person, or first person plural, we, us. This is what happened to us. And the fact that we can continue to sing these songs and that they have relevance is because of this, of things continuing to happen to us. So so I wanted to learn more of these songs, learn more about it from someone who knew a lot about it. Lo and behold, she shows a film of the Georgia Sea Island singers. And what I see is people moving in a counterclockwise circle. The movement is very sedate. And what they are singing in English. And they are using biblical characters as a reference. And since I already knew from some study of the Negro spirituals was that the way that they began to sing about characters in the Bible was because those characters in the Bible were, had lived through something that they were familiar with. So instead of using, say, the name of an African ancestor, they were using Moses, or they might use Jesus, but they were telling, they were using the Bible to tell their story. So that's another form of, what is it called? Syncretism. It's another form of syncretism. It's like hiding in plain sight. What you're really talking about is something else. This is what's on the surface. So I'm watching this film that Linda Tillery is showing. I'm seeing these people moving in a counterclockwise circle. And I see two things. Number one is that here is our history again. Number two, I'm seeing directly what I had thought did not exist. What I had thought was that everywhere else in the diaspora, Brazil, Jamaica, Grenada, Puerto Rico, Cuba, the Africans who had been forced here because of the slave trade, had kept something of their culture. There had been a profound cultural retention. And I thought, here in the United States, we didn't have that. We are the ones who are so lost. We didn't have that. I saw that film of the McIntosh County Shelters, and I said, here it is. The only thing is that it's in English. It had to be very, very deeply hidden. But I recognized it for what it was. I said, this is an African ritual. This is exactly what the Africans did when they were doing the counterclockwise circles in various parts of West Africa as homage to their ancestors. They did a sedate, it's not like Senegalese dance where everything is in the air. Very sedate, feet close to the floor. You are signaling to earth. You're signaling to the ancestors who are buried in the earth. You're signaling to the earth itself as a sentient being. That's what that movement is for. So number one, it is not dance. They will tell you in a minute, no, we're not dancing. That's something else. What we're doing here is we are shouting. The movement of the feet in that counterclockwise circle is the shout. The singing, I'll remember exactly what you call the singing, but in any event, and the way that, and this expression, the African-American expression of this retention, in our case, was because of the drum being taken away from us. So in the shout, there's a lot of rhythm. There's a lot of percussion going on, but there are no drums. And that's because in this area where this was, where this cultural retention took place, the Stono Rebellion in 1739, I think some of you probably recall that, was part of the way that they were able to call to each other and to get it going was with the drum. So after that, the drum was outlawed. Now, some other areas of the South, especially, you know, like in Louisiana and some other areas of the South, the drum was not outlawed. But in that area, it was. It was replaced then with very sophisticated hand clapping. They used a staff on the floor. The feet pounding on the floor was the other percussion. And so then a whole orchestra of sound, of holy sound and holy movement was reconstituted through this shouting. The McIntosh County Shouters have been doing this for many, many generations, continuously since before slavery ended, at least 15 generations. The first song, Knee Bone in the Morning. No, I'm not a good singer. Knee Bone in the Morning, oh, Knee Bone. I put my knee bone to the ground, oh, Lord, Knee Bone Band. What that is referring to is the other myth that we've had to deal with. No matter, you know, even however it has been supposedly dispelled, the other myth that we have to deal with is the idea that slavery happened because we were heathens. We didn't know God. And so then slavery saved us. And but that song, what they're talking about is that is the opening song. Every ring shout ceremony begins with that song, no matter what. And what that is talking about the beginning of our history in this land. The knee bone bends to thank God that they survived getting across the ocean. That's what it's for. So I think that, okay. So then in 2010, because of my husband, we started gathering some people who would be willing to sing with us. And at first we worked using just Negro spirituals. Then we started doing Juneteenth with Auto Egun. He taught us the liturgy for Auto Egun, accompanied by the Bata. Then we learned the songs from Ring Shout, and we put them all together as a ritual for Juneteenth, but essentially is a ritual showing the full expression of African and African American spirituality, having come full circle. Like, we were looking for African spirituality when we found what we could find, which was what was came here from Cuba. Then we found what had always been here, and we just put it together. This is our spiritual history. It was a way for us to begin to have a better sense of ourselves as African people in this part of the diaspora. So then there's the next things that we did. So we had the Juneteenth, we did Black History Month presentations, and I had the idea for the Black IP Festival, because so much of what we do, so much of what we celebrate or, you know, are reminded of are things that are sad, you know. I think you know what I mean. So the Black IP Festival was, the tagline is a celebration of African American food, music, and art, was a way to, instead of always referencing something having to do with death, is to reference our creativity in the face of all that we have dealt with. My husband is continually fascinated with the idea that 50 years after slavery ended, is that we have and jazz. By 1904, we have jazz. We have Jelly Roll Morton. We have all of these musicians who have mastered their instruments. And there were so many things that we did not have access to. And our creativity, especially musically, was phenomenal, to the point where African-American music is followed all over the world. You have people who play jazz in Australia. You understand what I'm saying? I said, everything that we do is imitated all over the world. You have people rapping in Chinese. So anyway, so this, our festival then was, and I said this earlier, is that we easily throw away the things that we used to do. And so the Black IP Festival was to celebrate our creativity, but also to nourish our roots. And so then the music that is at the forefront of the Black IP Festival, of course, you know, our group usually does something, but we're looking for people who are playing real instruments in real time. This year, we're going to have Andre Theory's Zydeco. We have MJ's Brass Boppers, Second Line Band. We have Marcus Shelby, who is a composer who has done jazz operas based on people like Harriet Tubman. And so that's what the Black IP Festival. Then the next thing that was really important to me was, like, a month before our first Black IP Festival in 2014, was when Mike Brown was killed in Missouri. And this followed Trayvon Martin. I can't even remember all of our young men and women who were being killed by the police. Trayvon Martin, Sean Bell. In any event, I was thinking about the fact that we have our people laying out on the street, being killed by the police. And then we put up memorials and for a few months. But as a practitioner of African spirituality, what is our response to these things that happen to our people? So much of what I do, or what we do as practitioners, is private, private ritual. Private ritual is private. But as practitioners, don't we owe something to our community? And I had heard that there were people in New York who went to places where someone had been killed and did a prayer. I'd heard that there are Catholic societies that do this. I'd heard that there were Asian societies that did this. And what is our response? Excuse me. So, and I had also heard that First Nation, when there was, I need to get something to drink. When there had been a battlefield, was that they went to spiritually cleanse the place where blood had been spilled. Part of our understanding is that like attracts like. So if blood has been spilled someplace, you know, the earth gets a taste for blood. So then you have to do something to cool that energy, you know, so that life, so that it doesn't call for death doesn't call for death again in that place. So why don't we go to the places where someone has been killed? Why don't we do auto-egging on the street? Why don't we offer this service to the families of Black and Brown victims of police terror? Why don't we do that? And so I have been thinking about that and talked to Tabaji. He agreed that we should do that. We should, you know, make our services known. But how do we do that? How do we reach these people? So in 2015, and some of you may know about this, December 2nd, 2015, a young man was gunned down by San Francisco police. It was caught on video. It was terrible. The community's response was incredible. Well, what do we do? And so there were town halls, there were meetings, there were demands that the police chief be fired, and he eventually was. But still in all, what is our, as for practitioners, what is our response to the suffering of our people? So in 2016, I went to the headquarters of a group that was founded after Oscar Grant was killed. Oscar Grant was killed January 1st, 2009 by the BART police. That's the equivalent of the subway here in the Bay Area. And the man who murdered him was eventually found guilty, but his sentence was, you know, really light. Nevertheless, Oscar Grant's uncle, they call him Uncle Bobby, was and is quite a force in terms of community organizing around this issue. And there was a meeting for the weekend of Oscar Grant's birthday. At that meeting was Eric Garner's mother, was Mike Brown's mother and father. There were people from all over the country whose loved one had been killed by the police. We were astounded. We were moved. And at that meeting was where I approached Uncle Bobby and I said, listen, this is what we'd like to do. Can we talk to you about this? So we met with him. And then they introduced us to the people who were doing the organizing around around Mario Woods. And in December of 2016, on the anniversary of his death, we were part of the acknowledgement of what had happened. We put up the ancestor shrine at the place where he was killed. We played Oro-Egun for him. And again, it was a gathering of other mothers and fathers whose children have been killed by the police. And so they were there. They told us of the effectiveness of the drum. There is a part of the ceremony, it's called closing egun, where we've done this several times now since 2016, where the mothers will say, here, come, let's go sit, get close to the drum now. They recognize a part of when the bata is playing that they know they feel something. They know they feel that in their stomach. They know that the drum is healing them in that moment. They tell us that. We're not telling them, you should feel such and such and thus and so. No, they're telling us, this is what the drum does for them. This is what the voices do for them. So we can go to the video now, but I wanted to say that the last one that we did, we were just at one yesterday for Colby Friday, and his mother, Denise Friday, was happened to be there. The first time that we did Auto Ego for Mario Woods in December of 2016. Her son had just been killed in October 2016 by the Stockton police. Between one thing and another, she had been asking us since then to come and do this healing for her son. And we had various conflicts of time. Sometimes, you know how people, when they're grieving, they forget to tell you something that they want. And so we finally were able to do this for her son, Colby Friday, yesterday. And so that comprises what our work was. And let's see, I'm going to see, I have an old computer, y'all. So Leah, are you there? Queen Leah?
Yes, I'm here. And Ia, if you'd like, I can go directly to the video.
Well, did you find, I don't know if you found what I'm looking for. So let me see if it'll work from my end first.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay, so give me a second. Lord. So if I just play it, then you can do it. Okay, so I'm playing it now.
Let me share your screen. Yeah, pause one moment, please.
Okay, wait. Exit first. Okay. I'm having technical. I said, pause.
Juneteenth, celebrating the end of slavery through prayer, has three parts. Auto ego.
It's not pausing.
Okay. I found it. Okay. There you go. You want me to start again?
Okay, let me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to click this button, which makes you the host, but you know what, Ia, let me do this. Let me share my screen because we would have to do a couple of things. I'm sorry. Okay. So I'm going to pull up your Facebook page, okay?
Okay.
Tell me the name of the page, please.
Awon Ohun Amira Choir.
Okay. Choir.
Yeah, that should have it.
Okay, so I'm here on videos.
Okay, Keep going down.
Okay. I'm all the way at the bottom.
Oh boy. All right, it's not showing up. Go back and just go to Awon Ohun Amira.
Okay. We want to go to videos.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you see it?
No, I don't. All right, so we'll try one more.
Hold on, there's one more page. Let's see. Videos. Okay, no, it's only these videos, these two.
Okay, all right. Go back and try Omnira Institute.
Okay. Omnira Institute. Is there anything that you see here?
Yeah, that one at the top, Roots of Faith, Roots of Freedom.
Okay, this one.
Yeah. This might be an old version, but it still gives you an overview of what we do. I should be hearing something.
It's playing. Yeah, are you hearing the volume? I hear it clearly.
I'm not hearing anything. But if everybody else can hear it, that's fine. I've heard this before.
Thumbs up if you're hearing. Did you hear the song? Thumbs up. I see no thumbs up. Y'all are not hearing it. Thumbs down if you're not hearing. Thumbs down. Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Let's see. Volume. Okay, let me try this. If you hear the volume once it starts playing, give me a thumbs up, please. Okay, can you all see the video? Do you see the video? Yes, thumbs up if you see the video. Okay, Cecily sees it. Okay, several of you see it, but you're not hearing it. I'm not understanding why. Let me do this. Let me try taking out my earphones. I'm not sure if that makes a difference. Thank you for your patience, ladies.
Juneteenth, celebrating the end of slavery through prayer, has three parts. Auto Egun.
I hear it now.
Okay.
Ring shell.
My baby's sick now.
And prayers in the traditions of the enslaved people.
My mother, Yarley, we have someone and honor an ancestors as well as our young children, because as we said, the Jehovah, that the youngest leaves of the tree will go close to
God. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
I'm not trying to find it with you. It's a big goodness. Let me just take you back. Spirituals and freedom songs.
Leah? Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm not sure this is really productive. Maybe you can just fast forward to the end and they could see a little bit of what we do for what I was just talking about. There you go.
Okay.
Right here.
Right about here?
Yeah. Okay.
To take tradition to the streets as a healing to today's woes.
Can everyone hear me? So this is the ritual for this one for Mario Woods. The previous one was for Alan Bluford. This is the grave sweeping day. We were reviving grave sweeping day. It used to be something that was done in the African American community that was similar to Dia de los Muertos or All Saints Day, where people would go and clean the graves. Here in the Bay Area, where graveyards are pretty integrated, there was not like I could find a place where there were neglected graves that were just of Black people. So what we selected was the graves of the people who were killed in Jonestown. So 41 years ago was when, I'm not sure that everyone would remember. If you're from here, then you do. But 41 years ago, there was something called the People's Temple in San Francisco. And it was led by Jim Jones. And Jim Jones was a white man who had professed the ideal of Black and white living together and of being highly integrated. And so he had a following of about 900 people, most of whom were Black. And people were, I guess they felt that they were persecuted, but they also wanted to have like a utopia of their own. So he moved everybody down to Guyana, and in the backwoods of Guyana, went to establish their own town. It was like 900 people. They called it Jonestown. In 1978, word of abuses were happening among members of People's Temple reached the United States. And so they had a congressman, Leo Ryan, who decided to investigate. So he went down there with Jackie Speier, who is now a congresswoman, to investigate, and they were met at the airfield with gunfire. They were shot at, he was killed, Speier was wounded. In the meantime, back at Jonestown, the people were, the term drinking the Kool-Aid came from this occasion, where they were forced at gunpoint to drink cyanide-laced Kool-Aid, and 900 some people died. Since these were whole families that were wiped out, then who could bury them? And so for a few months, there were 300, 400 people who had been killed who were unburied. So finally, Evergreen Cemetery in Oakland agreed to take these bodies, and they were buried in a mass grave. So at that mass grave is where we figured there would not be so many survivors. And so it's at that place that we enact an annual grave sweeping day, developed a ritual for cleaning the graves, and at that place is where we again do an extended oro ego litany for the ancestors. So that ends my talk, and you know, we have some other things that we're going to be doing next month. If you're in Oakland, the Black IP Festival will be on the front lawn of the of Oakland Technical High School on September 14th. Please come by and see us. So now there are questions. Let's go for it.
Thank you, Ia. That was amazing. So very informative. And so your work, the work that you all are doing is prolific, impactful, and very inspiring. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So if you have any questions or if anyone has any comments or reflections or just want to share any expressions, type yes in the chat, please. All right, Phoenix, please share.
Wrong, Nikki.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Nikia.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, how are you? So I said before that I'm very new to this work, like pretty brand new to this work. And I find myself even in this class as an African-American person who, I don't know if the word disconnect is right. My parents didn't know it to give to me. I was raised kind of Baptist, but my mother didn't feel right about that either. So I've just kind of been out here trying to find my way. I live in New York now. And what you shared, I mean, I try to trust when tears come to me. I figure energy needs to move, so just kind of go with it. And a lot of what you said resonated, the knee, the getting on the knee, praying and gratitude for surviving the journey. I'm a Black woman searching and looking for connection. And so frankly, another Black woman, again, when you talked about the face of God, that the feminine Nubian Black face of God. So I just find myself searching and moving. And so I'm so grateful, and I feel very much like I've drawn myself to this particular talk. Because for the most part, I live in New York now, so everybody's, when they ask you, well, you're Black, but where are you from? They're expecting you to say Jamaica or, you know, an island that has some connection. And my husband's half Dominican, so he has some connection. But I'm always out there kind of searching and filling out a place and not quite connected or where I belong, really anywhere. And so I just want to express, I don't have a question. I'm searching, and I'm just so thankful to what you shared. I'm going to watch this video probably at least 5 more times because I want to remember, I want to give it to my kids. I want to, you know, because right now I'm calling on what's in my cells, what's remembered in my veins. You know, I'm remembering through prayer. I'm remembering through visualization the best I can. And a lot of what you said, I've intuitively known that, you know, that the blood in the soil and that, you know, I think about the trees that hung bodies that are still standing. I think about the land that's still there that, you know, and family members, I will never even know their names. Like, you know, so I say all that to express just really sincere gratitude. Thank you so much for this.
You're welcome. And one thing that I would like you to do is look up McIntosh County Shelters online.
Yes.
And you can see them shouting, you know, you could see everything. You know, they did a presentation at the Smithsonian a couple years ago. I suggest that you look at that. And hear in their voices, you know, the authenticity of our history. And then there are places that you can go where, and everybody has a different sense of resonance, you know, like there are two places as far as I can tell so far in my, you know, journeys in the world where I know where north, south, east, and west is. Now I have a very, very bad sense of direction, except in Atlanta and Savannah, Georgia, and Seattle, Washington. All of a sudden in those two places, I know where I am. I remember where this street and that street, Savannah, walking on the cobblestones in downtown Savannah, the cobblestones were telling me, this is where we used to walk. We built this, you know, the buildings were saying, we built this, we did this, you know, I'm hearing everything. So once you go someplace where that land is actually going to speak to you, everything wakes up. I also suggest
North Carolina, but I didn't know why.
I was in where is Charleston? Charleston is, well, that was what happened to you. Well, when you go someplace where you can feel this resonance and mm-hmm. things start to wake up, then they continue to wake up.
Okay.
Read as much as you can. Some people, I have this blessing. I can read certain books and the ancestors are talking to me. The words are coming up out the page and into my mind. Mm-hmm. And so that happened with a couple of books that I told you about. Toni Morrison's Beloved. I knew I needed to read that book because all the other things that I had read about slavery did not tell me about the interiority. It's like, what did it actually feel like? All the other books, everything else that I had read talked about what happened. But what did it feel like? What did it actually do to you? And there's one line in Beloved where one of the characters talked about being afraid to love the blue of the sky because he feared it would be taken away from him because he was always being put in a box, being put into the dark. And so with that understanding, once I read that, I said two things. That is the source of my ancestral grief, the grief that I feel, the fear, the things that I feel that don't actually belong to me. Yeah. I did not live them in this lifetime. But that is, you know, the post-traumatic slave syndrome. Mm-hmm. The first time I read about that was in Toni Morrison's book. Joy DeGruy expressed it as a psychological phenomena that we endure. And I think once we understand that these things happen and they continue to happen and that we have to actively heal ourselves of this so we can move forward, then we actually seek out the medicine that we need. Now, why is this necessary? One of the things that I can tell you and that I feel very firmly about is the fact that whatever African Americans do, the rest of the world imitates without fail,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that means that there is a way that we are leaders. We don't actually even understand. But that is something. So then it is imperative that we heal ourselves because of the position that somehow we are in. So I didn't mean to take up all the question time.
No, I really appreciate that. I really appreciate this. It's absolutely necessary. I'm hearing exactly what I need to hear right now. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good. Oh, come on now. I didn't stun y'all into silence.
We have someone else. We have Joyce.
Okay.
Where is she? Joyce? There she is. Go ahead.
Okay, am I?
Yes, we can hear you.
Say thank you, for one, for what you said today. It's been a confirmation for me, and I'll tell you why. You said earlier you were raised in the Episcopal Church. I was raised in the African Methodist Episcopal Church. And being 69 years old, there's some things that we have seen that we can only teach others to see. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. When I was a child, I recognized the difference in going to my mother's home church in Grenada, Mississippi versus our home church in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
In Grenada, there was no music. There was no piano. There was stomping of the feet and clapping of the hands. When I first embraced Ifa and any other earth spirituality, I felt like I should turn away from what I learned as an African American. And I couldn't.
Right.
So I felt like I was being pulled in different directions. Mm-hmm. I could easily give up and gave up the image of a white Jesus. But I couldn't give up the history of my mother and her mother.
Exactly.
As they went through the things that they did to adorn the church on Sundays.
Yes.
When I buried her in her white missionary because she wanted that.
Right.
And still today, when I worship her at the altar, I sing her favorite song, In the Garden.
Yes.
And I'm just so thankful and blessed by what you said.
You're welcome.
Because I could feel like I could fully embrace that aspect. I know why I get dreams of the red clay dirt. I asked my grandmother, why so many dreams of the red clay dirt that was there in Mississippi? And she said, for the blood that was shed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I keep a little jar of red clay dirt on my altar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just filled up, and I just want to say thank you. I don't have a question. I just want to express how this connection is made, and thank you for doing what you do.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And I actually trust that some of you are going to use everything that you're learning in these lectures and move it forward. Find a way to move it forward. You know, we have to do ritual correctly, the way that we learned it, but we also have to keep moving it forward. This is not, really want to be cautious about, don't invent things, but there are places where healing is needed, and be the one to take the healing there. Mm-hmm. All of you, there's none of us as a human being who can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Ashay, there are several more people who wish to share.
Good.
So we have Nikki G. Phoenix, you're next.
Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay. So my question was, or is about, things that I see, when I used to live in Virginia. I lived in Virginia a couple of times, even as a, child, I would see people running in the woods, and it was always men, like running in the woods. I could be driving or riding, on the highway and look out to the woods, and I would see men running in the woods. We took a trip to Myrtle Beach, and I saw men running, and I'm just like, here we go again. I'm like, okay. I did my ancestry, and my ancestors were slaves in Virginia, South Carolina. And from what I know, although I was born in New York and raised in New York, our family is from Georgia, from Savannah. So how do I guess heal that? Like what I'm seeing, because I'm seeing it for a reason.
So what I think, and I think you would probably want to talk to Yeye about this, but I can just say what I think. I think that you need to have what is called a misa in Spanish and ikuyoko in Yoruba. And that is the session where your ancestors and your spirit guides, who are your ancestors, get a chance to actually reveal themselves to you through the mediums around you. Because you're seeing things, but you don't know how to interpret it yet. And some of the tools that you gain by attending these kinds of sessions help you to be able to hear, see, listen, but also know what is the response, you know, because there's a call, right? You're being called to something, but you don't know how to respond. And I'm not so good a seer that I could say to you, you know, do this, 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 and this, and this is going to help you with them. I can't see that. I'm not spontaneous like that. So, but that's what I think is one of the things that can be done. And then you can also ask them. You can say, you know what? I can see you, but I don't know what you want. I don't know what, how you want me to respond. So either figure out, because they have a job, they can do their part as well.
Right.
Figure out how you're going to deliver this message to me so that I can do something about it, or I don't want to see it anymore. Because you're the one in the body. You have the final authority. I can say what I think. I do. A friend of mine lives in Washington, D.C. She talks about seeing those spirits from the highway running in the woods.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I've seen them since I was a child.
Yeah. So she talks about seeing them. So this is, you know, people running from south to north would have been running through those woods. Mm. You understand?
Mm. Yes, ma'am.
So then it's just a matter of like, okay, I see you. What can I do for you, about you? Are you one of my relatives? How do you want me to remember you? Those are the things that you can, you know, say to yourself when you see them. But overall, I think especially if you've been seeing them since you were a child,
yes, ma'am.
I think it would be useful for you to have this ikuyoko. But I'm not in charge of that. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we have Lene.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Hi, Lene. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and all that you do. I just wanted to say that this was confirmation for me.
Wonderful.
That ceremony, and it's like I know I'm an imp and I feel a lot, but I just was crying during that ceremony because I could just feel the pain and also feel the release during that time. So I'm just using this as an opportunity to learn and try to have a better understanding of what this all means. So I just want to say thank you so much because it stirred something in my soul. You said a calling. So that's literally, during that video, they're like, hey, this is part of what you're supposed to be doing that I didn't even know existed. So so thank you for that. So that's all I wanted to say was thank you for that.
Glad to be of service.
Betty is next.
Hello, Iya.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes.
Yes. I have a comment. I wanted to say thank you so much for sharing your journey, your story with us. And when you mentioned about the Jim Jones and the 300 people who were put in a mass grave, I felt intense sadness in my heart. Like there's a connectiveness, and it is intense. It is intense. But I just want to share that comment. I want to say thank you so much for sharing your story with me. And what can I do about this heat that I feel in my chest area? Yeah.
So, where do you live?
I live in Clarksville, Tennessee.
Okay.
Yes.
What I'd like you to look up is that I'm talking about this particular mass grave.
Yes.
There are a couple. There are a couple of mass graves about us that we know about. One happened during the Civil War. I wish I could remember which date. Where there was, instead of taking prisoners, the Confederates killed everybody. Mm-hmm. There was a, what do you call it, when you have the black soldiers, instead of taking the prisoner, they killed all of them. That was a couple hundred people. Mm-hmm. There have been mass hangings during the heyday of Jim Crow. And I have become very mindful of the fact that starting in 1900, there was a resurgence of terror for African Americans. And 1915, with the movie Birth of the Nation, it was like gave permission for them to start killing us in very, you know, So in 1919, there was a Red Summer there. All around this time, 100 years ago,
right,
there are all these things that were happening to our towns. There are things that were happening to us. There's a certain level of terror that is, you know, we are in it again. We are in a cycle, a place in this country where white people have gone down this evil road that they never actually really separated themselves from. But they are intent on killing us, killing whoever, or just making sure that we don't thrive, you know? So I would say that there is somebody in your lineage that is familiar with that kind of terror. It's familiar. There's somebody in a mass grave somewhere that that may be near where you live. It may be a distant relative that was lost that is in this mass grave. And so you hear this and it's like somebody saying from the soil, yes. Here I am.
Yes, yes.
That happened to me too. You know, and so I think it's another thing for us. I think we all have this sensation that sometimes we'll read something about our history and I'll go like, write this.
Like, yes.
That one got me. That one didn't, but that one is like, what? Why?
Yeah.
And so, like you say, it's a call. So what is our response? Our response is, what do you need? What can I help you with? And don't do that to me if I can't help you. Yeah, you know, because we are sovereign. We are the ones living this life right now.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much.
But I do understand the feeling of like, of reading something or hearing something and like, oh my God.
Yeah. And it resonates so strongly.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Iya.
You're welcome.
Iya, thank you so very much. We are at our time, but I want to ask your permission to ask my question, if I may.
Yes, ma'am. Please do.
Thank you. I am making a connection between your being Olorisha Oya, a daughter and a priestess of Oya, and your very special calling to doing the work that you are dedicated to in honoring, healing, and elevating our ancestors, the Egun. And so my question is, you know, as we understand the foundation of our faith, of our walk, of this path, is our relationship with our ancestors. What would you have to teach or to offer us about working with our ancestors and also having a relationship with Oya and how the two work together or empower one another?
I would say it's very much important to put the horse before the cart. So, and since I had the experience of the cart coming before the horse myself, I would just say, you know, stick to divine order. I was initiated before I actually knew much about how to honor the ancestors. And so, I just kind of went around this bass backwards. I'm always hesitant, and I know that other people feel differently, but I'm always hesitant to suggest to people who have no level of initiation to start trying to engage with the Orisha. And there's a reason why I say this, is because with each ritual of initiation, you get some kind of protection about that initiation, through that initiation. So for instance, before I got my alekes, which was the first ritual of initiation, I didn't know anything about Orisha, really. But after that was when I began to have dreams and references having to do with the Orisha. If I hadn't had that, I would not have known how to respond. And also because I was initiated and there was someone in charge of me, then I could ask them. I said, you know, yeah, I had a dream about such and such. They would know what to do. So then if you just take this on yourself, and there are people that I know who have, you know, it's almost a full-time job for them, is that somebody reads something in a book and they decide they'll do that ritual. It's like, that one wasn't for you. You know, that really was not for you. And they have called something, and then they don't know what to do about it. So then they eventually have to find somebody who can clean that up for them. So I'm very hesitant to say, well, you can do this with Oya. I'm very hesitant to say that because I don't know how anybody else is going to respond. It could be that it's all well and good. You know, you put up a picture of Oya in your house, light a candle, it's okay. Other people, they put up something for her, and what does it invite? So I have to be really responsible about what I say and do in their name. There is nothing that I did, you know, of all these things that we've done, all these various, you know, going to corners and playing Oroegun for, these weren't just things that came to my mind and then they got done. Every single one from the Juneteenth on out, I went and had divination about it first. And most of the time, especially at the beginning, I didn't divine it myself, because that's how you can really make a mistake. You know, I had somebody else do it, someone of some level of expertise in divination to confirm, yes, you can do that. And this is how it can be safe for everybody. So that's why I'm just hesitant to say that. I can say, however, that I do know that all this work that I have been given to do for the deceased is because of Oya's protection. Not everyone can, nor should they, do this kind of work. But even my road of Oya is about the graveyard, is about the dead. There's some roads of Oya that are about the marketplace. It's not about the dead. So so in any event, I do know that that is her protection. This is, you know, it's like, okay, here's your area. This is what I have given you permission to work in. You don't go over there. You don't go over there. This is where you go.
Thank you, Iya. That's clear. That's very clear. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate you. You know, collectively, we offer you continued success in the great work that you're doing. You can expect your Facebook group following to increase as we all stay connected with the wonderful work that you are doing. And so is social media the best way for us to stay in touch?
You can find me under my given name, Wanda Ravenel, on Facebook. But also, I don't know how you communicate with everyone, Queen Leah, but you can give them all my phone number. And you can call me or text me. My email address is Ravenel, my last name, @AOL.com. So you can reach out if something occurs to you and say, oh, I should have asked her about that, then please do send me a text or an email, or you can find me on my own Facebook page. I'm not good at checking the other pages.
Okay. And last,
I want to say something.
Yes, excuse me.
I am really grateful to you, all of you who have asked me questions, all of you who have listened and heard, because part of our charge of being priest and priestesses of the Ialocha, Babalocha, is to be able to serve. And so I'm grateful to every one of you for this opportunity to serve you.
Ashe, Ashe, thank you, thank you, thank you. One more thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Your group, Omnira.
Omnira Institute.
Are there any performances that we should know about? Any upcoming events? You told us about Black IP Festival, of course.
Now, the next thing that we're doing, we all need a rest. The next thing that we're doing is, I think it's November 4th, is that we will be at Evergreen Cemetery to do the auto egun for the people who were killed in Guyana. That's the next thing that I know we're doing. If I find out that we're doing something sooner, then I'll let you know.
All right.
You know, and then you can let everybody else know.
Absolutely. We will do that. Well, I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to find a way to take everyone off of mute. Give me one moment. Okay, I'm unmuting everyone. And so at this time, let us all just say thank you to Iya Oyadei. Okay, go ahead, ladies, women.
Thank you,
Iya. You're welcome. God bless all of you right back. Oh, my goodness. I can see everyone. Hi. And bye. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for a phenomenal class. And again, we will make sure that Yeye Teach knows that we had a wonderful experience with you. So thank you. Thank you. Many blessings, Bobo Ire, to you and your family and your good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ashe, everybody.
Ashe.
Odabo.